You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Authentic Business Adventures can be found on Facebook for all you socialites out there. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kateman, business coach at Draw In Customers Business Coaching, and author of the Bold Business Book, available on Amazon. Today, I am so excited because I have AJ Sue of AJ Sue Consulting. So, AJ Sue, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling spectacular.
That is what I like to hear, man. I just love hanging out with you. You got some energy. I got some energy. I feel like pretty soon we're going to power a small state.
A little scary sometimes, like two together.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. And I haven't even had any caffeine today. I don't know where you're at.
No, caffeine-free. Green tea, man.
So, green tea. That's just a thing now.
No, it's making me feel better. I'm stronger.
Really?
No, I'm making that up, but it tastes good.
All right. Either way. So tell me, AJ Sue Consulting, AJ Sue, what do you do?
I am a small business coach.
All right. That's awesome.
Small in stature and small clients.
All right. Well, stature doesn't matter as long as you help them, right?
Big ideas.
All right. I love it. You got the answers here. Holy cow. So how long have you been doing this?
About 9 years now.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So what got you into it?
Getting fired, man.
That'll do it.
Yeah, seriously. So I was working out at a Land's End, and it was a great job, and management change, and here I was. I got outed right at the bottom of the Great Recession.
Sure.
It hurt, man.
I bet.
But I'll tell you what. I learned this. If you get fired, you have zero opportunity cost, and anything is better than what you're doing.
That's fair. Totally fair.
Only way to go is up.
You get to choose the ladder you start running up, right?
You do, but I'll tell you, it was like, I don't know if I'd be doing this if I had been fired or found myself unemployed at the bottom of nothing as opposed to a recession, because I probably would have just gone back into a corporate job.
All right.
Back in my cubicle.
Sure.
But I didn't do that because I couldn't do that.
Oh, because there just wasn't anything available because you're in the middle of a recession.
Right. But in my defense, I was a heck of a networking job-seeking guy. I came in like first loser like 6 times.
Nice. You get those fun little letters that say, thanks for applying.
Literally came in second, though.
Sure.
Out of industry, local.
Sure.
I did a really great job, but didn't land a corporate job.
Uh-huh.
Which was, in retrospect, an incredible gift.
Sure. But at the time, you're like, seriously, what do I have to do here?
What do I got to do?
Sure.
And I didn't want to reload the family because the family's number one.
Right.
Being here where we love to live is number one.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting, and we're patient enough, and we had the opportunity to wait, so it was
pretty
great.
So you chose business coaching, which I'm fond of, because it's what I do, right? So you're a smart man right there. So how did you choose that versus opening up a coffee shop or, doing anything else, right?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. Maybe it's in the insecurity of building a small business. There's a couple things. One is, how do you make a living?
Sure.
But as you think about making a living, there's people that are ready to make an investment. They've got the capital and the wherewithal to put it into a business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily the kind of guy that wants to build a business castle,
a
restaurant, a bookstore, what have you.
Sure.
Because there's an added dimension of risk to build out
huge
a shop.
Yeah.
What you do and what I do, we got our voice, we got our car, we drive to the coffee shop, we have coffee.
Sure.
And maybe you have a computer at home or something like that. So I would say it's a lower cost scenario.
Oh, low barrier to entry.
Low
crazy
barrier,
though. Yeah, yeah.
Which is either a really good thing or a really bad thing, right? Because other people can do it.
It's good if you're doing it, but then competition can bring it on.
Absolutely.
But then competition usually gets rid of itself, just like in any market.
Yeah, and I actually don't believe there's competition truly in the world.
Okay.
You feel competition.
At all?
At all.
Okay.
Because...
Tell me about that. That's interesting and compelling. And
so like... I am what I am.
Okay.
I do what I do in the way I do it.
Sure.
And there's a certain number of people in the world that actually want what I do the way I do it.
Sure.
If I'm true to what I do, that's my only largely sustainable form of business.
Okay.
The question isn't, is it competitive or not? The question is, are there enough people that want what I do the way I do it
to
make a business out of it?
Okay.
Those people that like what I do the way I do it, they're my people.
Sure.
The rest of the people who don't like the way I do what I do, they're not my people.
Sure. Fair.
The other coaches, your clients, may like something entirely different. So not my competition.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's within 10 miles. Maybe it's I talk with my hands a lot, which you can't see on the radio.
No, I talk with my hands normally too. But now I'm just laxed. It's
you
all
and
good.
I are like total high energy people. We would wear out a whole bunch of people.
Probably would.
You and I are kind of the antithesis of the corporate expression of contracting or
consulting,
whatever. None of those corporate-y people want us. You don't got a tie. I don't got a tie.
I choke on ties. I just, there's not a shirt with a neck big enough that I feel comfortable in.
Right.
I feel like a mafia hitman.
It's awesome.
Just like nobody wants me in a tie.
You got the haircut for it. It's perfect, right?
Right.
But all that says is our tribe is our tribe.
Right.
Maybe you have the east side of town and I got the west side of town. Mm-hmm. They're somewhat similar. But beyond that, I don't feel like it's competition. I feel like my job is to find my people and make them aware of me.
Sure.
And for most small businesses, it doesn't actually take very many people to make our businesses go.
It does not. No, that's very true.
In a consulting coaching business like ours, where I get my subscription annually, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be I could run my business on 30 or 40 clients
mm-hmm.
total
mm-hmm.
in a universe of 350 million people in America.
Right.
That's not very many.
That is not. No, so that's very
is
true.
Is there competition? I don't think so.
Sure.
At the high end where you go to big retail or big corporate, there is competition. But that's because they've got so much size, scope, and infrastructure investment.
Right.
That they've actually had to round off all the corners of a specific single personality.
Sure. You'd have to ask Sears if there's competition, right? Okay. To be like, well.
Sears and Target and Long's Drug, whoever, they all kind of view themselves as capturing the same people.
Sure.
Even that is not quite perfect. But at our level, at my level, microscopically,
mm-hmm.
or like our clients, they're so
loyal,
the tribe is small.
Sure, the volume of businesses that need coaching versus the volume of coaches available to coach them. Sure, yeah. I understand what you're saying. It's just a minuscule number of coaches. And we want more coaches because they can help educate people to even let them know that something like this exists.
Exactly, and in the way they want it.
Right.
Action Coach is a perfectly great coaching service.
Sure.
Their client is very different than mine.
Sure.
They're curriculum based. I'm dialogue based.
Mm-hmm.
They have a program that's a little bit more sort of tried and true, straight up and down.
Right.
Might wear a little bit more of a blazer.
That's so funny you say that.
Not me.
I was just talking to a coach, more corporate coach this weekend at a party. And she was talking about, do I have any curriculum? And I'm like, yeah, I do have curriculum. But the interesting thing is, it's rare that I end up using it. Because I'll talk with the client and I'll be like, hey, you know, let's just start at the bottom. I always say, let's start with the lowest hanging fruit and just work your way up to tree, right?
Right.
And I'll say like, okay, let's look at your past few clients and let's just figure out where you got them. And they'll be like, what? And I'm like, okay, let's just say this week, who did you help this week or this last week? Just name your clients. And I'm like, where would you go to invoice your clients? Mm-hmm. And they're like, invoice? And I was like, okay. We're not quite to curriculum yet.
You go straight down to the bottom.
Yeah.
What's making you worry today? What's a win or
a challenge? They're not even there.
Really?
They don't even know who they helped yesterday. They don't know who owes them money. They don't know who to send invoices to.
Totally agree. At the curriculum, sort of the operations of business level, totally agree.
Yeah.
My first start, like you, that bottom level is they're feeling something.
Mm-hmm.
Verifying, feeling happy because something great just happened.
Most of the time, they're feeling broke.
They're feeling broke or they're feeling under pressure because they can't figure out where the next client's coming from. Whatever their challenge is.
Sure.
That point of challenge,
mm-hmm.
that instinctive, emotional thing that is sort of dragging them back a little bit, I just want to check in and say, what's making you smile or frown today?
Sure.
And that's the jump off point for the conversation.
That's a fair question. Fair question, right? Right?
And it's like, I guess what's interesting for my clientele, and this is the way I do business, people are so instinctive about it. They actually worry or celebrate most of the right stuff.
And yeah, I would agree with that. Sure.
You can figure out what to do about that.
Mm-hmm.
But you start with, where is it hurt? And then we start doing mediation or causation of why
sure.
that pain exists or how to make
sure.
it feel better, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a curriculum. That's a
no.
dialogue that's responsive.
No, because there's such a gray area for what could it be, right? Because then people ask me, do you do any life coaching, right? And I'm like, well, I do business coaching. And I'm pretty sure if you don't have a life and you got a business, you're doing something wrong. So you're going to fall into the life coaching thing just by default,
that's
right?
That's right. I actually would tell you that I have to come full reveal.
Sure.
Like 5 of my clients call me their life coach.
That's fine.
And I never advertise as a life coach.
But sure.
In that small business realm, the business and the life are just two sides of a very thin coin.
Well, absolutely, because if you have
affect each other.
Yeah, if you have something, I tell you what, right? Start a business, run it, and then go through a divorce and not have any challenges in your business from there, right?
Oh my God! Oh, the other way around.
Don't tell me they're not connected.
Start a business, get married,
right? Fair, have a kid, right?
What does drives both
Yeah, or you see someone that's starting a business and then they got some health issues. I'm like, that's the same person, man. Yeah. That's an entrepreneur. So you got to fix that entrepreneur. Fix maybe the inoperative word there, but or not ideal word, right? Yeah. I don't want to fix you like you're broken, but
harness.
Help them, guide, whatever you want to.
Harness this energy.
Sure, just help them in whatever way. Right. You're going to help them in other areas of their life.
Yeah, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that's all you got.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you dedicate it to? Your life?
Right.
Yes. Your work? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Both? Yes. In the right balance.
Right, and what is the whole point of building up your business if it's not to live a better life, right?
Absolutely right.
So if you're not building it for that, what are you doing?
Why here?
I just love I just love filling jars with jam so I can fill more jars with jam.
My cupcakes are better than anyone. Nobody's even got to buy them.
Yeah, right? Oh, my gosh. It's so funny. We've seen the same stories, seen the same stuff.
Oh, God.
That's awesome. So you're married?
Yep.
All right. And were you married at the time when you got canned from the place?
Yeah, it's a hard time.
All right.
It's like married. We were married 25 years. We dated 7 years before that.
Congrats.
Thank you. Two kids.
All right. Congrats on that.
College and high school.
Nice.
But at the time, I lost my job and started. Actually, at the time, I started my new career.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The upside, right? It was quite a challenge.
Sure.
It was, you know, it's people, and this is my observation, people are so strongly identified with the job that they have.
Oh, hugely.
And the title that's bestowed them by the company that is courteous or generous enough to give them this job.
Definitely.
If you don't have that, it goes out when it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Identity is gone. So mm-hmm. what are you? It took me a long time to say that I am what I am. 9 years I've been in this business.
Sure.
But for the first 2 or 3 years, I'll say I was not this career yet.
Okay.
I was just something between a corporate guy and an independent guy.
Just feeling your way around, more or less.
Yeah, without a clear identity. It was sort of like this weird limbo thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what am I? I'm not this corporate guy. They just told me I'm not that anymore.
Mm-hmm. You got a piece of paper that says it, right?
You're not that person anymore. But through time, doing good things in the pathway to finding the new world.
Sure.
Career.
Mm-hmm.
If some people start saying things to you, and eventually you listen to them, they mm-hmm. say, oh, you're really helpful, you're a good contract, you're a good coach, or whatever mm-hmm. you are. And eventually enough people say it so that I could say it.
I'll say you believe it.
I believe it, and then I say it. I can't really say it at first.
Right.
Because I don't know.
Because you're like, that was a one-time thing.
I know.
Right? Like, I just got lucky. I know them. I was just giving you some good help, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm just ain't a helpful no guy. Thing. I'm not a coach. I'm a helpful guy.
Right.
But when I was a little kid, people mm-hmm. used to tell me, it happened all the time, you'd be a great teacher. They say, AJ, but they call me Alan at the time.
Sure.
That was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
AJ, you'd be a great coach or great teacher. And I go, I would not be a good teacher. I would strangle the children.
Yeah, right there with you.
And so I realize now that here I am,
mm-hmm.
54 years old, and I'm a teacher.
Fair, totally fair. Teacher, different crowd.
But somewhere in there, they knew that. People could see some application for what my skills were, my personality traits.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a teacher my whole life. And I don't know that until now, doing this job.
Sure.
And I just rejected it because that wasn't a career path that I could sort of ever relate to.
Because now the label teacher has kind of a negative connotation for some reason. I don't get it, but
it's definitely an undervalued connotation.
Hugely,
right?
Hugely.
But there's nothing more important than teaching, because everybody's doing stuff. Mm-hmm. Generally, people are smart and they're doing good things, but it's that difference between good and very good that allows you to be. Cross the gap between maybe unprofitable and profitable.
Fair.
Surviving, not surviving.
Thin line, very thin line.
Thin line. So
yep.
the like you and I, when we coach, if we help somebody 5%, whatever that means,
mm-hmm.
10%, whatever that means, that's probably the difference between breaking even or losing a little bit and being successful.
Oh, yeah.
Or being different between being successful and being hyper successful.
Right. I always tell people it's like a golf club, right? Just change your hit 2 degrees and see where the golf ball goes.
Exactly right.
Is it going to go close? It's only a 2 degree shift, right? Or is it going to go way off into some highway somewhere?
Yeah, left dog leg.
Yeah.
Slice it off the course.
Right?
Just a little tiny wrist action.
I'm terrible at golf, so I imagine I'm 2 degrees wrong direction. So. But in the end, that's the thing, right? What little tweak would it take to really make a good hit?
And people are too close to see it.
Mm-hmm.
In their own worlds, they're just too close to see it.
Too close, and oftentimes too in love.
Too in love.
I find people that are in love with their business, and they will just love that typewriter repair business into the grave as the internet comes on, you know?
Oh, it's terrible. It's like, I usually talk about the metaphoric cupcake business.
Sure.
Someone however they get to, they wealthy and they can do this, or they get laid off and they can start their cupcake business.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so in love with it. They make great cupcakes. They make 40 different types of great cupcakes, including the rum, dill pickle, mint cupcake
sure.
at the end, which they love.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so vested and so invested in that cupcake, they can't sort of see through to the clarity of that one's not actually selling very well.
Right.
How do you take it back to the 12 or 15 or 20 that actually matter?
Right. Then it comes down to pride, right? Pride's expensive. So you can tell people, yes. I make 40 cupcakes.
Yeah, it's like, or I am the best cupcake maker of all time.
Mm-hmm. I don't sell any, and I'm dead broke, but I'm the best cupcake maker in the world.
And on averages, they are dead broke, but they've got 20 or 30% of their business that's killing it.
Sure.
And then the rest is dragging it back down.
Totally fair. Totally right? fair. Yep, they're subsidizing the rest of their hobby.
Their ego is mm-hmm. taking away the benefit of the intellectually or
hugely
professionally
common.
Successful part
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
their love is too close to it.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, though, is they're smart. They actually know how to do all those cupcakes.
Right.
What they don't know is how to pick the ones that are powerful,
mm-hmm.
sellable, profitable.
Right.
And that's the whole thing. It's like just they're too close to see it. The passion's deep. The ego's strong.
Right. Collect the data. Measure the data. Act on the data. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you start your business. You tell your wife, hey, I'm going to be this business coach.
No, it didn't work like that, man.
Okay. How did it work?
I was like fumbling around.
Okay.
I was thinking, again, that limbo period of being sure. a cupcake guy or a corporate guy. Or
yeah, imagine it's guy. Not just I get fired tomorrow, I'm a business coach. There had yeah. to be a story there.
I did the whole thing. I went and did like Lee Heck Harris, and I was outsourced or outplaced, whatever, that placement service.
So sure.
teach you how to look for a job.
Mm-hmm.
Met some people there and worked on my elevator pitch, which was kind of like a great thing that really wasn't that valuable.
All right.
Started having cups of coffee with people.
All right.
Didn't understand it.
Sure.
I was doing a lot
didn't understand why, or?
I didn't understand networking.
Uh-huh. Okay.
As a corporate guy.
Sure.
Most corporate people are terrible networking people.
They're just terrible talking to people.
Yeah, they just live in their corporate office.
Right.
They know the people they already work with.
Let me text, email, or chat with you, but you want me to talk to you? Like, right. talk to you?
Some of them are good talkers, but they don't reach out in a constructive
sure.
way.
Yep.
So I was having a lot of cups of coffee, and I was looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd meet somebody and say, hi, I'm AJ. We talked 5 minutes. You got a job for me?
Mm-hmm.
Without even using the words, it's like this very kind of needy look at me, help
sure.
me kind of thing.
Please help me.
Please help me. I'm over here.
Sure.
And it's not networking.
Right.
I actually did this little video, micro content thing just recently.
Yeah.
And it was on this thing. Look, if you just want to network, all I want you to do in networking is to end the network conversation with, how can I help you?
Literally
that sentence.
Sure.
How many times have you been out meeting someone networking for the first time? And the whole time you go through this, and at the end, they don't ask you, how can I help you? They just like...
I can say hour and a half ago, I was talking with this kid. I say kid, he's probably 20-something, but he's got some kid. Software company he's trying to build.
Yeah.
And I was talking with him. We were just at the same event, this class thing, and I could tell that he was nervous talking to me. I'm like, why is this guy all nervous? I don't think he talks to people that often.
Yeah.
But I would ask him a question about his business, and he would say, well, okay. And then he'd go into the answer. Like, he's prepared for this moment.
Yep,
this is the question. And it's like, oh, yeah, that one. Okay, question number 75A. Here we go, right? Because yep. I was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, kind of a neat idea. How did you come up with that idea? Well, okay. And then he just went into it. And aside from him saying like every third word,
yep.
it was kind of a compelling story, but it was just so funny.
Right.
Like, we're just having a conversation here, right? Like, I'm not going to invest in you. And you're just telling me I'm just curious. We're just two people having a conversation. Why is this such a challenge for you?
Right. So have a conversation and then ask how you can help.
Yeah.
And maybe you can't.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much desperation, it seems, in these network conversations.
Oh, insane.
Like,
yeah.
I'm actually here to sell you a widget.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm actually here to have you give me a job.
Right.
The chances of that happening are almost zero.
Right. Like, oh, I've been waiting for you. Yeah. Glad you showed up. I've been to 17 networking events just waiting for you to come into my lap here.
This unfulfilled thing.
Yeah.
And I have been waiting for you to show up and sell me.
Right.
As opposed to talking and then having this communication, mm-hmm. right? So, but long story short, back to, I was just out there networking like a dumb guy.
Sure.
Looking for a job. Looking for a job instead of networking to meet people so that someday when they found the job, they would remember me.
Sure.
Right?
Fair.
But in that bumbly time, I wasn't a coach and I wasn't a corporate guy.
All right.
It was really hard. It was harder on my wife, maybe, than even me.
Well, I bet.
Because she was trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing.
Who am I married to?
Right. And mm-hmm. I'm like so lost in my world. I'm not seeing it.
Sure. Give me a timeline. Is this months or?
It was probably like a year and a half.
Okay. So like quite a while.
Yeah. And I thought I had mission.
Sure.
But honestly, trying to become a corporate guy versus start my own business. I didn't think about starting my own business.
All right.
But you get a lot of time when you're unemployed. It only takes about 5 or 10 minutes or half an hour to maybe look at Indeed.com and
right.
then write one letter and email it off.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. It's
mm-hmm.
And then have 2 cups of coffee. So you're well into 8 hours a week. And the rest is like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. You sent your resume into that black hole internet.
Gone. And that's, nobody gets a job by applying that way.
It's like, rare. Yeah.
You know, right.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows you?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I'll tell you one thing. I went and I built a catapult. I built a trebuchet, which is a really cool kind of pivoting catapult.
Oh, like literally a catapult.
Like literally a catapult.
Okay, I was like, is this like some figurative
an
thing?
An 8-foot arm, this thing could mathematically throw a 2-pound object 400 feet in the air.
Holy cow.
400 feet across like a
pond. Was your wife working at the time?
Yes.
So she came home from work and you're like, what's up, honey? I got this catapult. Just in case the Romans come back, I'm going to be prepared.
Yeah, like, I'm a woodworker, but it was fun and it was like this release.
Sure.
But it was like, that's kind of this weird, why are you doing that? I have no idea, because I got this time and I can.
Right.
But clearly, that was not very mission-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt that
way. Well, depending upon your mission.
Well, like siege warfare was like right up there on the to-do list.
If I make 100 of these, we'll almost be able to take over Piggly Wiggly.
I know. So it was not clear all that time in that process.
Sure.
I was unclear.
All right.
And I guess it only started to galvanize once I did. They tell you you're supposed to volunteer.
Yep.
When you're unemployed, you got mm-hmm. this time gap transition.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually did. I volunteered over at Willie Street Grocery Co-op.
Oh.
On their finance committee.
I didn't even know they had volunteer opportunity there, so that's cool.
Well, so a lot of these organizations existing around, like, I have boards or people that give them expertise or participatory
sure.
guidance.
Okay.
I did that for Willie Street. I actually sit on the Middleton Outreach Ministry, their finance committee now.
Oh, sure.
But there I was. I'm helping these organizations. I'm just occupying this little space, giving my opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I get the opportunity to be a finance guy, which mm-hmm. is what I was.
Sure.
My brain's kind of trained that
resume
way.
Builder, right?
Yeah.
And you get to help people.
I get to put it on there. But the funny thing is, it was actually this little, it was like having a little soapbox or a little stage for a moment with a little tiny spotlight.
Sure.
I said, look, here's AJ, and he seems to be this finance guy. He thinks like a finance guy. He
mm-hmm.
talks like a finance guy.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am, displaying me as a finance guy.
Sure.
That's the most important thing about volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
Well, second thing. First thing is you help the cause.
Mm-hmm.
First thing is you get to be whatever you are. You get to show the world that here is how I use these skills for the good in the world.
Sure.
That actually, doing that, led to one person on the committee who said, you need to meet these people.
Uh-huh.
So George Hoffheimer, and he works over at Filene's, they do the credit card analysis. He's like Mr. Brain the size of Jupiter.
Okay.
And one of his friend's client sets was Just Coffee Co-op.
Okay.
He said, you should go talk to these guys at Just Coffee Co-op. They would have a great conversation with you.
Huh.
So I did.
All right.
And they said, wow, we'd like you to do this. So I had a little tiny consulting thing that happened
All right.
with Just Coffee, which actually lasted a couple of years and ended without a title on it. Involving doing some coaching for them.
Interesting. Okay.
I wasn't calling it coaching, but I was,
sure.
I was helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And I built some sort of one-off Excel-based tools for them to run their business.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I actually did coaching
mm-hmm.
formally without even putting a label on it.
Sure.
All from volunteering with this little tiny stage and a little tiny spotlight.
Sure.
Just being a finance guy.
That makes sense. All right.
Yeah. And from there, it was sort of hit or miss for a while because I was doing the getting better at the networking and
mm-hmm.
continuing to help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
One of my mottos, help a lot and transact a little.
Sure.
If you help enough.
All right. Is it okay to do both? Help a lot and transact a lot?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, it is okay.
Okay.
I don't practically know if I've ever seen that.
Okay.
Help a lot and transact a lot.
Sure.
I guess that depends on how much a lot is.
Fair. Totally right? Fair, right?
Like, if you help
How much 10, is enough?
And you transact 10, that's awesome.
Sure.
I'm not that high.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
But like you and I, a guy like you and a guy like me, we go out and we meet people,
mm-hmm.
and we ask a lot of questions, we give our perspectives,
mm-hmm.
we commune, we share, we support, and mm-hmm. all that's very helpful. I work on with the finance committees and the volunteer co-op organizations.
Mm-hmm.
That's me helping the world.
Mm-hmm.
Being what I am, doing what I have skill and experience in to help the world,
mm-hmm.
somebody's going to want to buy that.
Sure. Totally fair.
Yeah. So
yep.
That's from that point of being unemployed, driving my wife crazy.
Right.
Starting to see myself doing certain helpful services or
mm-hmm.
maybe gifts of guidance to people
sure.
as we're along the way, to suddenly being a coach 9 years later.
Sure. You're building awareness of your skill set.
Yeah, it feels that way.
So let me ask you a question yeah. here. When you were helping the Just Coffee,
mm-hmm.
that was not volunteer.
It was not.
That was transactional.
Yes.
So, I mean, you're still helping them, but still cash is being exchanged.
Yep.
How did you figure out what to charge?
That's a great question. So my first thing I did was I went to the Google machine.
Okay.
And I said, what does a consultant charge?
Sure.
And there's this rule.
All right.
There's actually this rule. Like I came up with the first couple pages. It's the rule of 3X.
Okay.
And the rule states, if you're working in a corporation or some kind of job like that, and let's say that you're earning $50,000 a year.
Sure.
You take that and convert it into an hourly rate.
Okay.
$25 an hour.
Sure.
$2,000 a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You take that $25 an hour and you multiply it times 3.
Okay.
$75 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Rule of 3 times, 3X would say, if you go from a corporate job to a consulting job, that's how you calculate it. So if I had earned 50 grand, I would have charged $75.
Okay.
What's interesting is there's a logic to it. Like mm-hmm. if you know this, we go out and we make our own rain by helping a lot and having mm-hmm. a lot of coffee, whatever,
mm-hmm.
doing radio shows.
Sure, right? And, better hope so.
Like the rule is like about a third of your time is going to be selling.
Sure.
And a third of your time is going to be split between things you lose,
mm-hmm.
Benefits, mm-hmm. vacation, mm-hmm. there's going to be some tax inefficiency,
mm-hmm.
and maybe some sort of this, I don't know how to say it, but there's the last bit of the third is this inefficiency just helping.
Sure.
I guess it is. So mm-hmm. selling and inefficiency helping.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1/3 of your time you're working.
Okay.
Right? So that makes you sort of equal back to your corporate take home.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's how I did it initially. So I took my corporate salary, I divided it, cut it out, and then put it out there.
Sure.
And I remember this like clear as day. I was talking to this one guy. He said, I'd like you to do some work. And I said, oh, well, here's my rate would be this.
Mm-hmm.
He looked me square in the eye and said, there's no way anybody will pay you that.
Really?
Yeah, it's like straight out. And I said, and this is, I'm so proud of myself. I said, wow, that's disappointing. I guess we can't work together.
High five.
And it's like, and then I walked away going, oh my God, what did I just do?
Sure.
And it's like, I walked away and didn't have another thing to do. But I didn't want to dilute my rate. And I'll argue my rate at the time was even too low on the rule of 3X.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I didn't know what I was doing in sort of
right.
high traction, high effectiveness kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I figured out what to charge.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once you set your price, it's much harder to go up.
Sure.
It's easy to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have to, that one example, no way, no one will pay you that. You do have to hold your guns, hold your position
mm-hmm.
and believe that you're going to get somebody to pay you what you're worth.
Right.
And I think the rule of 3X is a great way to put that first stake in the
sure, side. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You have my mind rolling here because I'm like, I don't remember what I made last time that I actually had an actual job. But I know that if I 3X did, I probably still would have to pack my lunch every single day.
True. I guess there's some part about whether you're established in your
sure,
career yet.
Sure.
Right? Or what level of utilization of your skill and time.
Right. I guess if you're moving from a corporate job of some kind to something on your own but very similar position.
Right.
Like last job that I had, I think it was fixing printers, last job that I had.
Right.
Which so was, I was wrenching on machines.
Which wasn't using your intellect per se. A little bit of your intellect. But it wasn't
Half, I suppose.
It wasn't the part you use today.
No.
That where the thing that makes you able to do your business today is this like superhuman part of your experience in your brain, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess in the end, I tell people I was working on a buddy's 61 international pickup this weekend, and I loved it because I'm like, I fix stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Whether it's businesses, whether it's a 61 international truck, whether it's a printer,
uh-huh.
I fix stuff. I hate fixing printers now. Just when people call, say like, don't you do that anymore?
I already done that.
No, I don't do that. But fixing stuff is so much fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even wrenching on this rusty piece of junk truck.
There's more intellectual challenge to that, or freshness to it.
Oh, huge freshness. Yeah. I used to be a mechanic, so it's interesting now to come back to it. And you have to, like, so, oh, wait.
So let's say you're a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you could work on 61 International.
Sure.
You could work on printers.
Mm-hmm.
You could work on small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You could work on Elon Musk's rockets.
Sure.
Okay. If you're the guy with a special little hammer that you can knock it in the right spot and fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that when you knock the solenoid on the International,
mm-hmm.
you just generated $200 worth of value.
Sure.
You take the same hammer, you knock it on the printer,
mm-hmm.
you generate $50 worth of value because there's more people that can knock the printer.
Right.
And when you knock the little thing on the spaceship that Elon Musk just built, it's worth like $1 million because that's
sure.
a really expensive thing.
$1 million and I have to tolerate Elon as my boss, though.
$2 million for you, then.
Okay.
So you tack it on there, right? So your hammer tap is now worth $2 million for mm-hmm. the right job, right?
Fair, yep.
The question is, should everybody pay you $2 million for knocking on whatever they want you to knock on?
Sure.
Because you got a $2 million hammer
mm-hmm.
shot right mm-hmm. there, right? It doesn't matter what they want you to do or fix.
Mm-hmm.
You're the mechanic that can generate $1 million or $2 million for this properly placed hammer strike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think your rate's $2 million a hammer strike.
Sure. Well, if we 3X that,
yeah.
it's $6 million.
But your buddy you do it for as a favor.
Right.
You're not going to charge him.
I believe that was a beer.
Yeah. Well, good markup. For the printer guy,
mm-hmm.
your customer comes in, yeah, you'll fix their printer with the hammer strike.
Mm-hmm.
For $2 million,
mm-hmm.
he'll go away, right?
I would only have to sell one a year.
Yeah, but he would buy it. He'd go find the $50 guy.
Right, right.
But the point there in all this is your hammer strike, or whatever your skill applied is,
sure.
is worth something. It's worth X.
Absolutely.
Regardless of how you apply it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got only 2,000 hours a year.
Mm-hmm.
You only got, whatever, 60 years of work.
Mm-hmm.
You better, this is what it's worth.
Right.
And the market will pick out who decides to pay the price or not.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a NASCAR driver and I drive Formula One or whatever,
mm-hmm.
if someone asks me to drive a little Yugo or whatever.
Yeah, let's do Uber.
Uber, it'll still cost you what they pay it.
Sure.
These professional drivers.
Mm-hmm.
That's all part of this pricing thing and making sure you're comfortable in that, waiting for the right people to come to fully leverage your skills.
Mm-hmm.
But, it took a long time to go through that and sort of end up at the equilibrium point I'm at in rates.
Sure.
And my rates are higher than they were. But
that's good.
It is good. And they go up a little bit every year.
Sure.
Different customers, as I bring on new clients, they mm-hmm. get a little bit higher rates.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always a little bit of a painful, slightly.
So why do you think that is?
For my clients or for me?
For you.
It's because there's uncertainty.
Okay.
It's like, am I going to cross a breaking point? If I just add 10 more cents to this price tag
sure.
on this cupcake,
mm-hmm.
will people not buy the cupcake anymore and go down the street and buy the donut? You don't know where they're at exactly.
Sure.
Some of them will.
But something like you, where it's not necessarily tangible, right? And they're already getting a payback from it, or they should be getting a payback from it, right?
It is the payback math, the ROI math. If you really are doing a good job making your clients and partners aware of the ROI math,
mm-hmm.
it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You've actually reversed the ROI math and made sure what you're asking for is reasonable.
Definitely.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people out there that don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how hard you work that,
mm-hmm.
they see an expense. They don't do the ROI
sure.
part. They just do the
sure.
They do the I part. It's expense only.
The one thing they enter in their QuickBooks, right?
Oh,
it just says one expense.
So,
jerk.
It's hard. It's really hard. And that part is the unknown part.
Sure.
So the hardest thing in all of this is the human factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually also the easiest thing about what you and I do.
Right.
It's hardest because humans are very unpredictable.
Right. That's the fun part, though.
I know. At the small level, small business level, it's the most sure thing because humans are the most caring.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas corporations are not generally caring
right.
at all. And they'll say, well, he raised his price 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Hard math. Out.
You know, I can tell you a little story in regards to that. I had my printer repair company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing okay, right? But I was working a lot.
Yeah, you're undervalued, though, I know.
Yeah, as printer repair, there's a cap to what you can make because it's the value of the printer and then the value of that printer to the company. And generally speaking, the volume of paper being printed mm-hmm. was going down. Amazon at the time was getting into the toner game, so consumables, yep, which was half my business, that was being bitten into.
You were fungible, man.
Yeah, so it was an interesting time to be in that industry. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I think I came across one of my competitors, and we're friendly, right? So, some of the competitors were friendly. So, I mean, like, from company-wide, they were not, but individual technicians, they would ask me for help, so they were friendly. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to this technician. I was giving him some advice and stuff like this on a machine he was working on. And I was like, what are you guys charging for this, right? And he told me. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and then there's a trip charge. And he was like 50% higher than I was, plus a $25 trip charge. And I thought, what? And you're calling me for advice, and I'm giving it to you for free. So I thought, okay, we got to revamp this, right? So I go over my pricing, and I'm like, boom, we're just going to raise prices. Mm-hmm. So this is what the rates are, and we're doing this trip charge. It's time that we start making some money. Plus, I got to be able to pay my technicians because for some reason they want to get paid, right? Jeez. Anyways, so I raised prices, and the majority of the big business that we're doing is with bigger, larger companies, uh-huh, right? I didn't have any fallout. Zero. I raised my rates 30-some percent.
Was that because you were too low or because they loved you a lot?
Oh, boy, that's a fair question. I'm going to say it's a combination of both.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because we banked on customer service. Yep. I said if the other companies, like if our competition ever got good at customer service, we'd be out of business because that's our meal ticket.
Right.
The other companies are so bad at it. Like, I mean, to a fault. Yeah. We're talking like worse than McDonald's.
You know, so all these services, like your printer service or even your call service, any of these services. One thing people crave is certainty.
Mm-hmm. Totally fair.
If they know what it is, and they know it's reliable and that it'll be the first call to solve the problem, you're in like Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
And this pricing's got to be reasonable.
Right.
Boy, certainty is the most undervalued part of a service. Mm-hmm. Whether you deliver it through customer service or the speed of arrival or the guarantee because if we didn't do it right, we'll come back and fix it again. Whatever you give them.
Right.
So that they have certainty,
then
pricing is like frictionless almost.
Right, so, right.
So you were too low though. Did you add a trip charge after that?
I did.
Did it help your bottom line a little bit?
Definitely. Yeah, then I felt like how many years have I been under? And I had coaches before that never once mentioned, you know, like, what are you charging? Let's look at that. So part of me starting my business coaching company came from dealing with other coaches that I felt didn't do an adequate job, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I can totally help people because I've actually been there.
Yes, now you're like, that thing we talked about starting out is like, you know, how do you do it? Well, I meet with people for coffee and I say, James, how's it going? Give me a check-in. And you go, oh, you know, I just, last weekend I was out at the lake and I had all these emails that came in and they made me worry a little bit, but I was still at the lake and it was great. So I came back and I realized that I've got these three customers that are going through the same problem. And I don't know what I'm going to do.
Sure.
So this, what you're thinking about comes up to the top. And then I, you know, might say, I need to make more money or I need to solve this service problem. And,
sure.
And they'll say, so how are you going to do that? Or in the pricing example, it's like, so you need to make more money. Like, do other people charge more than you? I don't know. And I go, wow, you have no idea?
Sure.
How could you have no idea, man? Can't you just call them up and just like, hi, I'm consumer?
Yeah.
How much it costs to fix my printer? A $50 trip charge, 75 minimum parts charge, time charge,
sure,
at least an hour, and then extra above that. Thanks. And you hang up and then you go, oh my God, I need a trip charge.
Right? These guys are terrible at their business.
How do you know that? I don't understand this thing about your prior coaches. It's this weird thing about efficiency versus effectiveness. A lot of people I meet are sort of floating around. There's a lot of attention paid to efficiency. It's like, well, we're going to make your process really smooth.
Sure.
It's going to be an incredibly efficient process. And my first question is it an effective process? Is the price generally representative of what the market will bear or not? Almost all these questions are the effectiveness questions are almost always easier to get sort of a chainsaw answer to.
Sure.
If the efficiency question.
Chainsaw answer. Help me with that.
There's a spectrum of work. It goes from scalpels to machetes to chainsaws to bulldozers.
Okay.
The only good stuff happens between machetes and chainsaws.
Okay.
The scalpels, too slow, too small.
Okay.
Just like polishing the fenders.
Sure.
Except on the 61.
Right. No, don't use a scalpel there. Right?
No, but this, you can do the fine polish work there. But in the middle for moving your business,
mm-hmm.
if you're doing that fine polish work, the mm-hmm. little tiny meaningless scalpel level. Sure. Meaningless. If you go from chainsaw up to bulldozer, that's too risky. It's crazy town stuff.
All right. So instead of cupcakes, we're just doing wedding cakes. Let's do this.
Yeah. Or like, you know, I'm only going to do these humongous cakes for like some royalty somewhere.
Sure.
It's crazy. Or I'm going to totally jettison all my cakes and suddenly turn into croissants or something.
Okay.
Like that.
Sure.
But like between machetes and chainsaws, there's mm-hmm. this speed and impact relationship.
Okay.
I want a lot of speed
mm-hmm.
and I want a lot of impact.
All right, gotcha.
So like this chainsaw moment
mm-hmm.
of doing something meaningful in a safe way,
mm-hmm.
that's the sort of, you can price change things. You could, instead of going from wedding cakes to only croissants, you could say, I'm going to bake 2 batches of croissants
mm-hmm.
next Tuesday.
Sure.
That's a really big philosophical difference, right?
Sure. Prove the model first before you jump in there right. full steam.
And do something really fast.
Mm-hmm.
One day, I can make a batch of croissants and put them out there next to my wedding cake and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like making half a croissant and hiding it in the kitchen.
Sure.
It's not doing a wholesale change to your business, but mm-hmm. it's something rapid and really noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the pricing thing, in the services, whatever you're doing,
mm-hmm.
this is a moment for every business person to look for the effective things. This chainsaw to machete range is great for making effective change.
Gotcha.
Efficient change happens between scalpels and machetes.
All right.
Just kind of these little incremental 1%, 2% gains.
Sure, sure.
I want people to take a chance, bake 2 recipes of croissants.
Sure.
Have that as a total risk. So you're not making your business much more efficient. You're actually not making it any more efficient.
Right. Arguably less so.
A little bit inefficient.
Sure.
But the effectiveness of it could be quantum, right?
Okay, sure. Because you're introducing some risk with potential reward.
Huge reward if mm-hmm. now your business becomes half wedding cakes and half croissants.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, you could have something to sell Monday through Friday when
sure.
there's no weddings.
Right.
It's amplified, right? So my space and my admonition to all small businesses is to spend this energy less so on efficiency and more so on effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of it is time.
Mm-hmm.
I got 7 days. 5 days, whatever
you want. Yeah, argue all of it is time.
Eight
unless
days,
you have a multiplier of some
days.
Kind.
It's always based upon that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I have limited, my limited resource
sure.
is literally the hours I can commit to the business.
Mm-hmm.
If I can plant an orchard that grows fruit on its own,
sure.
with rain falling from the sky,
mm-hmm.
that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
If I can bake 1 less wedding cake and bake 10 batches of croissants.
Sure.
Those croissants will carry me through the week, and I might be able to make a really great markup on the 2 hours I put in the croissants.
Sure.
That I wouldn't make on that one incremental wedding cake.
Mm-hmm.
With obviously some care to protect the brand.
Right.
And what you represent.
They told me no.
I'm so confused now.
Right.
But you do have to be within the range of logical branding, right?
Sure.
But you can do these effectiveness things that are so much more powerful.
Yeah, that's clever. I like that. That's interesting. So take me back to you. You got a few months rolling as doing the consulting stuff.
Yeah.
At what point did you let your wife know that you got, like, what? At what point did you think that you had a coaching business? Or did you tell your wife that you had a coaching business?
About 3 years in.
Okay.
Well, she.
It sounds like it was kind of a gradual transition, and then it just kind of happened, and
yeah.
you look in the rearview mirror, and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm a coach now.
Oh, yeah, and actually, full disclosure. So I have 2 pieces of what I do.
Oh.
The world, in this conversation, in mm-hmm. my time at Barrique's downtown Middleton having coffee,
sure. yep.
To the world there, I am a small business coach.
Okay.
It is my storefront. It is my billboard. It's
sure.
my brand. It's everything I do is small business coach.
Okay.
There is another piece of professional work that I do.
Uh-huh.
And it is like this heavy lifting test analytics thing I do for large retailers.
Okay.
Like really large retailers.
Okay.
Like, several national shoe store chains with more than 2,000 stores.
Okay.
I could do this analytics set for them on a very specific proprietary analysis software platform.
Sure.
That was the majority of my income for a while.
Okay.
Even as I told the world in Middleton and Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
that I'm the small business coach.
Now, gotcha. Okay.
Practically, I am a small business coach. It is my first love.
Mm-hmm.
It is where my biggest contributions happen,
mm-hmm.
on sort of that one-to-one, business-to-business level.
Sure.
This other part is just something I was very good at.
Mm-hmm.
I can support those companies really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a, my corporate DNA lineage.
Sure.
So I was doing kind of a lot of different things in this space. I was cobbling this
mm-hmm.
independent business thing.
Sure.
What was different is this analytics bit I was supporting to corporate America. Well, I was doing it on a contractor basis.
Okay.
Not as an employee.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it was my own AJSU.com business.
Sure.
But it's continued to evolve where now it's like, you know, the majority of what I do is business coaching factually.
Okay.
And then there's some that I do of this sort of big analytics thing.
Gotcha. All
right. The world never knows about that. It's mm-hmm. sort of like in the wedding cake example.
Sure.
If I bake chocolate chip cookies and I put a generic label and put them on a counter in the back of the store, no one knows I make them.
Nobody really needs to know, though. You don't want to spend any time, energy, or effort marketing that.
That's right. So it's kind of like this... In the utilization of our time as business people,
mm-hmm.
we always want to take whatever time we have and spend it on the A work.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes we don't have enough A work to fill it up.
Sure.
We can take that other stuff and other time and use it on B or C work, but always to the greatest advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And sometimes even when I say the A work, sometimes that's not billable hours.
Sure.
It might be the sales that relate to driving the A business appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
But I got this A business and this B business.
Mm-hmm.
And the B work has sustained me while I built the A work.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right? So I,
that's fair.
I was making cookies and I made one wedding cake a week.
Sure.
But the cookies were actually supporting.
Mm-hmm.
To my wife, your question, it was like, well, he's independent consultant contract
guy. Sure. Checks come in, mortgage gets paid, kids get fed, we're right. all good.
She's doing her job, so we have stability there.
Sure.
It is, it's more like when I start calling myself a business coach, is more about when I believe it
mm-hmm.
in the majority, or I believe the story of it.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell that more effectively to the world.
Sure.
Initially, for that first year and a half, while I was job hunting and contracting, consulting a little bit.
Right.
First two or three years where I was doing a hodgepodge of everything and starting to say I'm a contract consultant.
Sure.
Maybe a coach towards the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a day when I said, I am a business coach.
Gotcha.
And that was sort of a weird kind of observation that I'm here, I'm mm-hmm. this,
mm-hmm.
really?
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't happen. I didn't make it happen. It just sort of, one day I woke up and it was like, I guess I am.
So at that point, is that when you stopped looking for a corporate gig?
That's interesting. The answer is kind of.
Okay. Or have you stopped looking for a corporate gig? There's a presumption in the question.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that's exactly right. This other part of my business, the nature of it is such that I continue to build awareness to supporting those analytics,
mm-hmm.
those cookies in the back counter, if you will,
mm-hmm.
because it takes no energy to maintain that awareness.
Gotcha.
I go to a conference once a year to put my face back out there.
Sure, because I imagine the people that you need to sell to.
It's a limited pool.
Yeah.
It's a limited pool.
Right.
And generally, maintaining something like that doesn't take a ton of effort.
Mm-hmm. It's just awareness to that pool.
Right. It's more like how much more clear it is for me that my A-ness, the A of being a coach,
mm-hmm.
is like the thing. It's clearly my primary reason for being in the world.
Sure.
And then there's this other thing.
Gotcha.
It's just other thing exists.
Okay.
So that in balance, it's like I maintain it, but my thrust is over here. I'm
just all right.
being a coach.
All right. Nice.
Have my cups of tea and my cups of coffee.
Sure.
Hang out, talk to people.
Just looking for ways to go to a coffee shop, man. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. That's awesome. Yeah. So what is your favorite thing about doing what you do?
You know, it's the human piece of it, honestly. It's like to see somebody walk away with something in their mind that they're not quite sure how it fits,
mm-hmm.
or that lights up an answer for them,
mm-hmm.
and they can go and deploy it,
mm-hmm.
sort of in that chainsaw machete range quickly. They can test it.
Sure.
They can try something really quickly or deploy something in a small scale very quickly, which is not something I saw hardly at all in corporate America.
Uh-huh.
It's the bureaucracy of it.
Sure.
Small business can turn on a dime,
mm-hmm.
if we allow them and help them turn smartly.
Yes.
At the right scale.
Yep.
test it out, mm-hmm. or at least go in soft, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and then gain comfort and skill around it to build it out, expand it.
Mm-hmm.
That is joyous with small businesses. It's amazing how small business has this potential, usually like right through the next door, if they just care to put their hand on the knob and turn it.
Right.
A little tiny bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, usually there is some efficiency gain there.
Mm-hmm.
They can actually bake their cookies faster or something.
Sure.
But generally, there's this great opportunity to be more highly effective.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I actually am saying more highly effective in spending their time.
Right.
For the greatest advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Which is monetary, which is family, which is joy and fulfillment. It's
sure.
All of those things.
Mm-hmm.
For just a small twist of the dial,
mm-hmm.
they can radically change their joy or success in their
sure.
small business life.
The now, challenge is they have 57 dials to choose from, right?
Yeah, so like, but turn it distinctly and do it for efficacy and something radically different,
mm-hmm.
so that it actually makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like in my coaching, I say I do three things for clients.
Okay.
One is I help them not fail.
All right.
Which is less about efficiency, but some.
Sure.
I help them have more fun.
Okay.
Which is really
huge.
A thing. It's huge because so many people get into their small business because they actually love what they're making or doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they actually realize they're running a business, which makes it not fun.
Right. Right. What do you mean paperwork?
And then the third thing is grow faster.
Sure.
And that grow faster thing, you don't grow faster by adding a new type of wedding cake.
No.
You grow faster by introducing your croissants mm-hmm. or whatever it is that's substantially different,
mm-hmm.
because that diminishing returns will tell you that last new 20th type of cupcake or wedding cake,
mm-hmm.
it ain't going to make that big a difference.
There's only so many people shopping for cupcakes at any given moment.
That's right. And the 12, the 6, the 2 flavors that they all want,
right.
chocolate and vanilla,
yeah,
that's like 80% of the marketplace.
Right,
so the
right.
extra ones don't do much for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put a croissant right by it,
mm-hmm.
that's a distinctly different thing. And you might get people that will buy a cupcake and a croissant.
Right.
Or a new set of customers that come in for a croissant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where businesses grow faster.
Right.
So it's like, and I guess the headache thing is interesting because when they take the complexity down, they take their cupcake count from 40 down to 20 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
And they take the count down to streamline everything. That's usually where the headaches are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually like there's so much motion and sort of chaos.
Oh yeah, trying to keep up with ingredients in that case and yeah. shipments and vendors, and
it's like my thing is like the joy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any answers. I only have really great questions. I spectacular
sure.
questions is me.
Mm-hmm.
That means no homework, by the way. If I ask a question, I don't have any homework because the guy with the answer has the homework.
Sure.
And that's the business person.
Mm-hmm.
They actually know the answer when they hear the right question. And question might be, why in the heck do you make 40 kinds of cupcakes?
Right.
Does anybody actually buy that, you know,
that's
rum, mint, pickle cupcake?
Fantastic statement that you said there. Because I joke with people that, for the most part, I'm not telling you anything new. This is all stuff that you already know.
Yeah, they know it all.
But you're just not aware of it, right?
Yeah. They don't have a lens to ask the question to know there's any other reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, stop swinging at the pitches that are low and out in the dirt.
Right, right.
Know what you're good at, know mm-hmm. what counts. And be patient and know that it will work.
Right.
And
that's
fair.
It
might not.
Mm-hmm.
But if you thought about it and were disciplined about it, and if you've done your homework,
mm-hmm.
what you dream of being and what you can minimize the business to be,
sure,
should be right. Get as small as you can and then become as big as you must in terms of complexity.
Sure.
So focus in on one cupcake.
Right.
You probably can't make a cupcake store on one cupcake. So make it as small as you can.
Better be
I only make rum
heck
cupcakes,
of a cupcake, right?
So you go down to one and say, that's too small.
Mm-hmm.
And once you figure out what the smallest incarnation is, the most compelling.
Sure.
Then you make it bigger and you go, I need at least 6 kinds of cupcakes. So you mm-hmm. go down to one, back up to 6.
Sure.
And you stop there because that's as big as you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to starting at 100 types of possible cupcakes and going, I can't do 100. I'm going to cut it down to 50.
Sure. We look at any microbrewery, right? They got their one staple, and then they got the other ones to reinforce it, right?
But they
got to
get small, the staple.
Yep.
And they're known for that.
Figure out which one that is, because you don't know off the bat.
Boil it down.
Yep.
And then stretch back up.
Mm-hmm.
The higher up you stretch, the more you compromise.
Mm-hmm.
If you just do it from the tops down, like, I'm going to, instead of 100, I'm only going to do 50 types of beer.
Sure.
The problem with that is, 50 is, you'll never get down to a specialty.
Right. I'm going to be everything to everybody.
I'm going to be half of everything to half of nobody.
Sure. Right. Right.
Half of everything to half of nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And so small to big.
Sure.
That is the key.
I got one other question quick for you.
Sure.
Well, a couple more, but really quick. Tell me, what is your secret to making good decisions?
Segmentation.
Segmentation. All right.
Yeah, this is really, to me, it's like classification.
Okay.
So this is my skill that I worked on since I was 5 years old.
Sure.
Sorting my Legos, sorting pennies and nickels. Nice. There's all these little differences. Mm-hmm. You can take a pile of something and you segment it. You divide it into clusters or groups. You know, that in practice, that is like take all your clients and flight them. A, B, and C. A clients, B clients, C clients.
Okay.
You could figure out a rubric on why they're A's, B's, or C's. But generally, sure. I don't require that. I don't encourage it. You already know who your A's and B's and C's are for all the right reasons. So flight them and then ask yourself, why do I have these C's?
Sure.
That's how you make
Or could decisions. I convert them to B's?
Yes. Or is it? And if you do that, then you say, okay, if I can, is it easier to find a B than to change a C to a B?
Sure. Fair. Right? Fair question.
But your question, what makes good decisions? It's realizing the world is not homogenous in your choices and really trying to figure out is this a good or a bad thing, this mix. How do I cut off the part that's bad and replace it with something that's good?
Sure.
Almost always good decisions are made based upon understanding the choice better.
Sure. That makes sense. That's fair. I like it. Then one of the last questions, do you have a favorite business book?
Well, it may seem weird. There's a book in the 90s called Good to Great.
Yeah.
And I read it.
I read the book, yep.
Because I was supposed to read it. The corporate guys bought it for us, the management.
That's awesome.
And so I read it, and I like the idea of the hedgehog in it.
Okay.
But I don't really care about the hedgehog as it comes to businesses like Long's Drug or Apple Computer or whatever. What I care about is the hedgehog as it relates to people.
Okay.
So for 15 years, I've been doing my own hedgehog for me personally. Same things. It's like what I love, what I'm best in the world at, what I can be compensated for or find value in. And in the middle of this, of all these little microscopic abilities and skills I have, there's six things in the middle of it. One of them is asking questions. One of them is segmentation. One of them is kindness. One of them is metaphors. One of them is debate. But these elements in the triple overlap of a personal hedgehog, I actually know today that those have powered every success, every job I've ever had.
Huh.
And I know that, of course, my life, as I share this with people, they will look at this, my hedgehog list, and they will know what to do with it.
All right.
And there'll be things that I don't actually have in my realm of awareness.
Sure.
So if I have this, I give you my list of my superhero overlap hedgehog skills.
Mm-hmm.
If I share that broadly with the world, this is like your ability to hit a hammer on a rocket ship, whatever it is.
Yep.
You could hit a billion different things with that. If you don't know what those things are, you don't know that you can, and you don't know what it's worth.
Fair. Totally fair.
Your skills are infinitely applicable. So if you know what your skills are and you share them with the world, everything will come to you.
Sure. Makes sense.
It's that. So that for that single reason, that's why Good to Great is my favorite business book.
Awesome. That's fair. I like it. AJ Sue, before we go, what is a website they can...
AJSue.com.
Well, that makes it super easy. And that's AJ the letters, right?
AJSUE.
Awesome. And then phone number?
608-630-3277.
All right. And let's just go. Email.
AJSue@AJSue.com.
Holy cow. If it were any easier, it would be easier.com. That's awesome.
Call me. Let's have tea.
That's perfect. In Middleton at Barrique's, the office of AJ. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kateman, business coach at Draw In Customers Business Coaching and author of the Bold Business Book, available on Amazon. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, and our wonderful guest, AJ Sue of AJ Sue Consulting. AJ, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
This is awesome. I don't think time has ever gone faster in this studio. Holy cow. I feel let's just keep going for another 7 hours here. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 6 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at the sunprairiemediacenter.com. All right. I hate ending when we've got a good guest. We can also be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link on drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome and enjoy your business.